Talking today with Dr. Temple Grandin, the professor of animal science at Colorado State University. Thank you so much for being with us today.
It's really great to be here with you today.
Well, we wanted to talk a little bit about sustainability in cattle because we've had a couple of really hard years with COVID and market reactions and things like that. What do you think it takes for folks to understand that cattle is sustainable?
I've done a lot of thinking about this. I've worked for years on improving handling at slaughter plants, designing equipment such as the center track restrainer system, which at least half the cattle in this country go to, handle this piece of equipment when they go to a large plant. And I've been thinking a lot about, you know, where do cattle fit in on sustainability? I've been getting increasingly interested in this field because you got more and more people questioning cattle. You just look at them as terrible environment wreckers. And I've been reading a lot more about crop rotation, grazing cattle on cover crops, intensive grazing systems where you can improve soil health. These are things that we need to be doing. And there's some very progressive people out there really improving things with their pasture management. I mean, I've seen pasture that's never been grazed and it looks terrible. I've also seen pasture that's been overgrazed, and I've seen pasture that's been grazed right, and it's actually improved the land. This is something that's truly sustainable. And we have huge amounts of land where the only way you can raise food on it is a grazing animal. Western United States, that'd be true, but also the outback of Australia. I've had a chance to fly over the outback of Australia in a small plane, and there's no way to raise crops there. There's not enough groundwater. There's not enough rain. And so the grazing animal, that'd be cattle, sheep, goats, whatever, bison, if we use them right, can actually improve things. Now, I want to emphasize to people that grazing conditions vary tremendously in different parts of the world, and you need to get extremely good local advice on the best way to do things. I can't emphasize that enough. I've also done a lot of thinking about stuff that looks sustainable that's not. Okay, biofuels, when you do it in moderation, it's sustainable. If you start exporting it, it's no longer sustainable because you're putting it on a diesel-powered ship. That's not sustainable. We've got to look at what are truly sustainable things.
Well, and I think some people don't understand upcycling with cattle and how they can take something, you know, ruminants that nothing else is going to use and turn it into something great.
Well, that's just it. And these are lands that tend to be more arid lands in a lot of places, and you can't grow any kind of a crop on them. Animals are part of the land. About 3 or 4 years ago, we had a seminar at our animal science department, and they invited an agronomist to come in, and he explained how the very best cropland in Iowa and Illinois was created by herds of bison. That's a grazing animal. And the predators would keep them bunched, so they'd come in for a few days and mow the grass and then move on. And now what we have to do is artificially bunch them with things like electric fencing or herding methods. And so you graze a piece of land and move on. And then in different parts of the country, it's going to depend upon how long you have to rest that pasture for it to recover. And one basic principle I've learned about is the top of the grass recovers quicker than the roots. And you've got to let the roots thoroughly recover.
Well, I know that cattle are, of course, close to your heart. So let's talk a little bit about cattle behavior. As we get into the fall calving months, what are some things that producers should do to get ready and to care for their cattle as they get ready to have babies?
Well, one thing that has really improved a whole lot in the cattle industry is stockmanship. I mean, the NCBA's funded a lot of stockmanship training seminars. I got asked just the other day if cattle had memories of bad experiences. And I go, yes, they can definitely remember bad experiences. In fact, some of the first research I did when I came to CSU back in 1990, around the early 90s, was I watched a bunch of cattle going through a squeeze chute, and I kept track of which ones accidentally got clunked on the head by the head gate. And then they had to work them every 30 days for another experiment. And the ones that got accidentally clunked on the head remembered that when they came back the next month, and they were more likely to balk and refuse to put their head in the head gate. So they definitely remember things. An animal, any animal, lives in a sensory-based world, a visual world, a world of sound, a world of smells. You want to understand them. You want to get away from language. You can often improve movement through your corrals simply by removing distractions. Things like all the vehicles parked alongside the fence and you've got a reflection on the vehicles, or a coat on the fence, or there's a piece of chain hanging down, or some other little thing that jiggles. You want to get that done out of the way. You know.
So that way, when you're doctoring the cattle, or especially if you run like an AI system where you're doing embryo transplants, you want to make the time that the cattle go through the chutes a pleasant experience that they'll remember.
Well, you want to at least make it a neutral experience. And another thing that helps, and there was some old research done by Jeffrey Hudson in Australia, and he found a little feed reward when the sheep went through the chutes made them more willing to come back in the future. And they remembered that a whole year later. Animals remember visual things. My student Megan Corgan did a very interesting experiment that might explain why horses sometimes spook for apparently no reason. And she was one of my graduate students, and she took a plastic playset, like for a toddler, that's got a little swing and a slide, it's brightly colored, and walked fillies and colts by it, fillies and colts by it 15 times. And the first time that they walked by it, they'd stop, put their head up, puff out their nostrils. And then they finally got habituated. So then she took the playset and she rotated it 90 degrees. And when they came back past it the first time after it was rotated, they acted as if it was a brand new object. Now, this was all done at a slow walk, because if this had been done at a gallop with someone riding a horse would have slammed on the brakes and they would have gotten dumped off. But sure, that it's visually different. Think about it. A slide looks different when you turn it 90 degrees. You see, it's a picture, visual memory that the horse has.
Well, and that makes a lot of sense, because I know sometimes people think that calves spook. I used to have a heifer when I would lead her by a certain post that would take off running every single time. And me, in my naive mind, didn't realize she was probably seeing something on the fence that spooked her every single day that we got to that exact place. But those kinds of things are really important to notice.
Or she might have had something bad happen near that part of the fence. Another common problem is what people say, my horse is fine at home. My steer went berserk at the show. And there's a lot of new novel things at a show that you need to get your animal habituated to, things like flags, bikes, and balloons. And one of the best ways to do that is let your animal voluntarily approach these things. Don't shove it in their face. If you were to decorate a pasture fence with flags, the cattle or the horses will come up and investigate. But if you shove it in their face quickly, that's going to be scary. See, something new is attractive when an animal can voluntarily approach, and it's scary when it just suddenly appears, especially for the animal that has a more genetically flighty temperament.
Do you recommend keeping, like, so if you have calves or mama cows that are a little bit crazy, is there anything that you can do to, you know, try to get them to act a little bit better, or should you just cull them from the herd?
Well, there's some cattle that are completely crazy. You might just want to cull them from the herd. There's been a lot of interest in weaning methods. I just read an interesting article on weaning, and it talked about a lot of things that people already know, but they're things that people need to be reminded of, is before you wean them, you want to make sure they know how to drink out of a float-controlled water and things they might run into when they go down the supply chain. Because there's been some cattle that have practically died of thirst because every time the float-controlled water went shh, they were afraid of it. So it'd be a good idea to learn how to drink out of that before you leave the ranch, and do that before you actually wean them. And a lot of people are doing fence line weaning because the calf's more interested in being near mom than he is drinking from her. And you want to have him eating some other feed too, out of troughs and out of other things before you wean them.
Do you find that's the most productive way to wean calves?
You know, the fence line weaning, and there's also been the other method with the nose flaps. But the problem with that is you've got to take them in and out. And if that doesn't match your vaccination program, then you're going to have to run them through the chute an extra time. So I think more people are just going with the fence line weaning. And I think that's probably really a good way to go.
Well, I know you've worked closely with the beef quality assurance and finding ways to better treat cattle. What are some things that you think producers should do to make sure that they're providing the best stockmanship to the cattle?
Well, the first thing is stockmanship training. Okay, let's just look at very simple things you can do. Like you have cattle lined up in the single file chute to get them in the squeeze chute. Sometimes you can get them to move ahead if you just quickly walk back by them in the opposite direction. And when you cross the shoulder at the point of balance, they'll go forward. Very simple thing. The other thing is electric prods should never be a primary tool. I don't recommend banning them, but they're not your primary tool. And there's some very stubborn animals that won't go into the squeeze chute. A quick touch with an electric prod is preferable to hard tail twisting. And the big mistake that people make when they twist tails is when the cow moves forward, they keep twisting it. If you just touch the tail and she steps forward, then let go.
Right.
The principle is when they do what you want them to do, give them relief. You bring them in on the pasture, you put some pressure on the flight zone, they're going where you want them to go, then back off. They rear up in the chute when you're handling them, back off, get out of the flight zone. And I had people say, well, Temple just talks about, you know, just basic, very basic things, but I find that that's necessary because you have new people coming into the industry all the time. I have a new book, relatively new book out for small producers called Temple Grandin's Guide to Working with Farm Animals. And it covers just basic things. And
because you're basically saying that you can train cattle to do what you want with kindness.
Well, yes. And you can also train cattle like to, you know, move pastures by honking the horn. One thing I don't like is cattle that see a vehicle and they just want to chase it. It's a lot better to make the food associated with maybe the vehicle's horn rather than with the sight of the vehicle. Also, you can get cattle so tame and pushy that when you're feeding them, pushing up on gates and pushing up on four-wheelers. Now, if you put, what you got to do is wait until they stand calmly, then you open the gate or put the feed down. Because if you give them the feed when they're pushing and shoving, now you've just rewarded pushing and shoving. And that's not a behavior you want to encourage in really big, heavy animals.
It's almost like you can train dogs kind of like you can train cattle, except you're working with like 1,200 pound dogs.
Well, yeah, and that size of an animal tip over a four wheeler, and then you know never let them find out the feed bags rip,
right?
Because you can't undo that knowledge once they discover that.
Yes, that's exactly like when your dog jumps up and gets the steak off the counter, you're not going to be able to undo that reward because it was too good.
Well, that's the problem. And you're getting similar things with bears breaking into houses and cars.
Yep.
Now they've learned how to do this.